in Chicago at the time. They found that a lot of the meat that was being sold, there were actually animal feces in there. There were also insects and animal parts, and in some cases they found human parts in the meat. So the government, when this book came out, the citizens thought that was disgusting, so they complained. And of course, Congress made laws to protect them. And so these are kind of the different acts or laws that have developed over the years due to just problems that have occurred. In 1906, the Pure Food and Drug Act was enabled. And if you look at the pattern of these regulations or these statutes, they really occurred due to incidents that happened within society. The other big one is in 1978, CGMPs, current good manufacturing practices for drugs and devices, came out. And please keep note to, or take note of 21 CFR. That's CFR stands for the Code of Federal Regulations, 210 and 211. So this is statutory, meaning that if you don't follow GMP, you can actually go to jail. You can lose your medical license, as in the case in University of Pennsylvania with their gene therapy trial in 2000 with Dr. Wilson. This is just to show you that there's a lot of regulations that have developed over the years due to drug manufacturing and incidents that have occurred due to drug manufacturing. Excuse me. So, what are GMPs? GMPs were developed out of a need for consistent methods to develop and manufacture drugs, devices, and food in the U.S. The GMP regulations are promulgated and enforced by the FDA, primarily housed within the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. GMPs are based on industry best practices that continually evolve as science, technology, and manufacturing techniques change, and is commonly referred to as CGMP, the C meaning current. And so, what is the purpose of good manufacturing practices? Well, the idea is that if you follow FDA requirements for GMP, your final product that you get gives you a consistent, high-quality drug product. And that's the theory. And GMPs are methods, facilities, or controls used in the production of drugs, devices, foods, and biologics. These manufacturing practices are designed to ensure the safety, identity, strength, quality, purity of such products, and they're driven by standard operating procedures. If you haven't seen an SOP, I actually brought one of ours as an example. So we have 120 SOPs currently in the GMP facility. Within them, they describe, and this is just for transporting cell products. It has the purpose, the principle, scope, definitions, attachments, reference documents, and then the actual procedure. And this really dictates how we do things, and it makes the processes that we do within the facility standardized. In terms of the regulations, this isn't all-encompassing, but these are just some of the regulations. Of course, I mentioned 21 CFR 210 and 211 earlier, and that really is the facility in terms of manufacturing, processing, packing, holding, finished pharmaceuticals. The other one that I want you to pay attention to is investigational new drug applications. I believe you've already had two lectures on clinical trials. 21 CFR 312 is specific to INDs. The other one, for what I do specifically, is biologics. So that's 21 CFR 600. And then the other important one is your quality management system. In this case, it's 21 CFR Part 820. And these are the main bodies that you have to follow if you want to manufacture a drug product anywhere. So these regulations we have to follow here at Roswell Park when we manufacture a drug, and as well as if you see Novartis, when they make their drug products, they have to follow the same regulations. And when you look at the regulations, and this is just an excerpt from there, magnified in, you see the language is very generic. Any such building shall have adequate space for the orderly placement of equipment and materials to prevent mix-ups between different components, drug product, containers, closures, labeling, in-process materials, or drug products, and to prevent contamination. And I won't continue on. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that it's very generic, and there's a reason why it's generic. And you can't expect people that processes meats to follow the same regulations for the people that manufacture, for example, an injectable. So they leave it up to the manufacturer to develop a system to comply with these regulations. So, to reiterate, GMP regulations are largely general and open for interpretation. The benefit is that manufacturers and researchers are able to interpret and apply the regulations in ways that make work best for their unique situations. So the risk, though, is that the flexibility may lead to confusion during the interpretation of the regulation and misapplied control mechanisms. So you can understand that somebody or a company, for example, that's trying to turn over a profit, they might not have the same bar that somebody else might have, specifically because they're trying to save money, and because the regulations are so loose, they can cut corners in some areas and say, we're complying to the letter of the law. So, GMPs establishes the minimum GMP for methods to be used. So the regulations, 21 CFR 211, the Code of Federal Regulations, establishes the minimum GMP for methods to be used and the facilities or controls to be used for the manufacture, processing, packing, or holding of a drug to assure that the drug is safe, has the appropriate identity and strength, and meets quality and purity characteristics. So, in terms of violations, there can be severe consequences. The product is adulterated. In terms of a drug product, so that's the final product that you receive at the end of manufacturing, you have to do these tests, these release criteria, and I'll talk about these later. And just because the drug product meets the specifications or the QC test, it doesn't necessarily mean that the product is safe to use. And so the process is what GMPs really looks at. So if you were to manufacture a drug product in your garage, it doesn't necessarily mean, and it passed all the release criteria. According to the FDA, because you didn't manufacture under good manufacturing practices, it's adulterated, meaning that you cannot give this to a patient for a clinical trial. Some of the other consequences is shutdown of the manufacturing facility. As I don't know if you guys heard, but about 6 months ago, two of the three GMP facilities at the NCI was shut down because of a failure to meet their GMP standards. Seizure of the product, recall of the product. And of course, in the case of NCI as well as University of Pennsylvania, front page press coverage. So in 2001, as you know, there was a patient by the name of Jesse Gelsinger, which one of the first, and this is news, so it's public knowledge, was exposed to a gene therapy trial, which unfortunately he passed due to this. And because of that, Dr. Wilson at University of Pennsylvania, first of all, got fined, but Dr. Wilson, who was a PI of the study, lost his medical license. So there are consequences. And of course, if you're a company, it's a competitive disadvantage. Being shut down, you're obviously going to lose revenue during that time. So, continuing on, GMPs hold on product applications. So one of the first clinical trials that, and this wasn't due to GMP, but there was actually a clinical trial happening. I don't know if you guys heard of bubble boy disease or SCID, severe combined immune deficiency. So one of the first stem cell gene therapy, where you took CD34 positive cells, you take a gamma retroviral vector. In this case, their gene was producing, I think it was the gamma chain, the common gamma chain. And so the patients on these trials actually got leukemia because of the gene therapy. So 4 out of 10 patients ended up getting leukemia. And based off of that, all gene therapy trials in the U.S., and even though this didn't happen in the U.S., all gene therapy trials in the U.S. were put on hold. And in fact, our gene therapy trial back in 2001 was put on hold from 2001 to 2003, where we were treating ADA SCID at the time. Injunction, consent decree, Schering, and these are all fines that they or damages that they had to pay. Schering Plough, $500 million. Abbott Laboratories, $100 million. Wyeth Ace Laboratories, $30 million. And of course, even individual defendants were named due to these violations. And there are also criminal investigations and indictments, and of course, lawsuits. United States versus King versus Solvay Pharmaceuticals. This was due to, believe it or not, a labeling issue, and there was a lawsuit due to this. And so, and I mentioned earlier, the C for GMP stands for current, or current good manufacturing practices. And so the FDA has evolved over the years in terms of how you manufacture. And they really wanted to take a scientific approach. So the FDA put out a guidance document called the 21st Century Risk-Based Approach. And with this, they really wanted to take risks analysis into account when manufacturing a drug product. So risk-based assessments is critical, and up-to-date science-based policies and standards. 21 CFR Part 11 has to do with in terms of electronic documents, and an integrated systems approach in terms of the quality, facilities, equipment, material, production, packaging, labeling, and laboratory control, and international cooperation. And a few years back, the ICH has developed, not a few years, sorry, they've actually been around for a while. They're in the process of harmonizing a lot of the GMP regulations, both here, Europe, and other countries. And the U.S. is starting to adopt these regulations in their guidance documents, and propose amendments regarding validation and cross-contamination. So the basics, you have to have quality control, which is separate from quality assurance. And as I mentioned earlier, when you make a drug product, you have to release the drug product, and so you have to do quality control tests, and you have to ensure that the product meets these specifications. You have quality assurance. And these really are systems to ensure control and consistency in manufacturing the drug. And part of it is having SOPs, monitoring the environment, you know, making sure that your equipment are calibrated on a regular schedule. And of course, documentation. And this has really been a mantra that you've probably heard. If it's not written, it didn't happen. Or if it is not documented, it did not happen. That's not true 100% of the time, but for the most part, it is. And everything that you need to do, you can't say to the FDA, and when you get audited, which eventually you will, you can't say to them, look, trust us, we did it. They're not going to believe you unless you have documentation to prove that you actually did what you say that you're going to do. In terms of raw materials to manufacture the drug product, you can't take something specifically from a catalog from VWR or Fisher, a research-grade product, not in all cases. And there are exceptions for phase one clinical trials where you can take research-grade raw materials and put it into patients, but you have to have the right tests done, and a lot of this is up to the sponsor or the PI to ensure that research-grade products going into humans are safe. Excipients, you also have to audit the suppliers on a regular basis. We just got audited last week by FACT, Foundation for the Accreditation of Cellular Therapy, and this was one of the critical things that they were looking at. And in terms of when you do the audit, they're very, very specific as to how you audit the suppliers and what records you keep when you do audit the suppliers. before entering into contract, review regulatory history, and you monitor regulatory compliance. And then you also test incoming raw material. If you don't directly test, you have some type of test to ensure that the right tests were done. All right. Now we're going to start really going into the regulations. So with buildings and facilities, this applies to 21 CFR 211, 42 to 58. And again, you don't necessarily have to remember the sections. I think overall, that one slide I had in the beginning showing you the main components of the Code of Federal Regulations, specifically the four or five that I mentioned, is going to be important. Separate or defined areas as are necessary to prevent contamination or mix-ups. Air filtration system, the HVAC in production areas, and you have one and that it meets the requirements. And then you have a system for sanitation within the facility, and they leave it up to you to decide how best to do that. 21 CFR 211-100. Written production and process control procedures shall be followed in manufacturing and shall be documented at the time of performance. So not only do you have to have SOPs, you have to have forms and work instructions. Any deviation from these procedures shall be recorded and explained or justified. So I don't know if you guys, I didn't go through the clinical trials portion of your class. But do they speak about deviations, non-conformances, things like that? No? Okay. So when you have an IND, part of the IND has a clinical protocol. And another part of the IND is the CMC section, or the chemistry manufacturing controls. So basically the protocol talks about the clinical side and part of the manufacturing. The CMC section, the chemistry manufacturing control, specifically talks about how you plan on manufacturing, the quality systems, what tests you're going to be doing. So within that, if you deviate from any of these documents, you have to report it to the, you have to report it to the FDA. And this is what that's requiring here. You must have written procedures and testing of product while being manufactured to assure batch uniformity and integrity. Again, QC testing. Control procedures shall be established to monitor output and to validate manufacturing processes that could cause variability. And dating or expiration dating, critical for any type of drug to ensure that you're using something that is stable at the time of issuance. To assure that a drug product meets applicable standards of identity, strength, quality, and purity. And sometimes you might hear the term SQIP, and essentially that's an acronym for strength, quality, identity, purity, SQIP. At the time of use, it shall bear an expiration date determined by appropriate stability testing described in section 211.166. An expiration date shall be related to any storage conditions stated on the labeling, as determined by stability studies described in section 211. And it might seem very trivial that a label on a drug product is critical. There's a company called Mankind. They had inhalable insulin. This was back in 2007-ish. You could probably Google it if you want to get an exact date. And essentially, they found that it was better than injectable insulin. And so they had all the studies proving that it was. But at the end of the day, because they wanted to hit a broader market, they labeled the product in a way that the FDA did not agree to. So the FDA essentially told them, we do not approve your product. Even though the product in clinical trials and clinical study has actually been shown to be better than what's currently on the market. So labeling is critical, and for a company is critical to really hit your targets in terms of customer targets. Company must have written procedures designed to assure that correct labels, labeling, and packaging materials are used for drug products. Such written procedures shall be followed. Again, this is why we have 120 SOPs for a small lab. Think about a biotech company. They could potentially have thousands of SOPs, for everything that they do. Label mix-ups have been a major reason for drug product recalls in the past. Test for, in terms of laboratory controls, testing and release for distribution. For each batch of drug product, there should be laboratory determination of satisfactory conformance to final specifications for the drug product, including the identity and strength of each active ingredient prior to release. And this is usually put in the CMC section of your IND. And there shall be appropriate laboratory testing as necessary of each batch required to be free of objectionable microorganisms. So every drug that we manufacture and every drug that you see manufactured will have something called, if it doesn't come with it, it'll be made available if you request it. It's called a C of A, or Certificate of Analysis. Within the Certificate of Analysis, it actually has a listing of tests. And some of the tests that you see very commonly are endotoxin, mycoplasma. In terms of cellular products, mycoplasma. And others, they do simple gram stains and bacterial tests and fungal tests. And that's pretty standard for a lot of these drug products. And you need to have a written testing program designed to assess stability characteristics, and this is required. Stability testing results must be used in determining storage conditions and expiration dates. When you had your lecture on clinical trials, you probably learned that there were four phases, maybe five phases, including, it's more and more popular now, called a phase zero. But classically, there's four phases, right? Phase one, safety. Phase two, efficacy. Phase three, you do the controls, randomization, et cetera. Then phase four is post-market analysis. So in terms of the different phases, and please, you know, if I said something different than what you learned in the clinical trial section, or if the language is a little bit different, please use the language from that lecture and not my own. But in general, what I wanted to point out that with the different phases of a clinical trial, there's a stepped approach. So the requirements for a phase three is not necessarily the requirements for a phase one for certain things. And that makes sense because clinical trials, in essence, are experimental. If you had the answer during a phase one clinical trial, then what's the point of going to phase two and phase three and applying for a BLA or an NDA? That stands for New Drug Application or Biologic License Application for biologics, such as Kimra, which is the CAR T cell product. So, production record review. Production and control records shall be reviewed and approved by the quality control unit to determine compliance with all established, approved, written procedures before a batch is released or distributed. In most cases, drugs are produced in batches. For cellular therapy, what we do here at Roswell Park in my lab, each batch is essentially a patient. You have to do a product impact assessment, and this is really critical, and FDA, FACT, and all the regulatory agencies look at trend analysis. It's not good enough that your product meets the specified QC results, but you have to trend to see how the patients and outcomes and everything else in terms of temperature, humidity, everything else going on within the facility, and, of course, distributed product. So, cGMP deviation investigations. And I described what deviations are earlier. Essentially, if you deviate from either the standard operating procedure, the clinical protocol, or the IND, the CMC section of the IND, any explained discrepancy or the failure of a batch of or any of its components to meet any of its specifications must be investigated whether or not the batch has already been distributed. Investigate other batches of same drug product. Investigate other drug products that may have been associated with the specific failure or discrepancy. You have to have a written record of the investigation. And we've had discrepancies. If anybody that's manufacturing a drug tells you everything runs perfectly every single time, they're lying, and that's a red flag. You have these in place to identify the discrepancies and to fix them. And that's really what the FDA and all the other regulatory agencies like ISO really wants you to do, is they understand you're human, but you have to have a system to iterate, to make better. Documenting the investigation is critical. Hypotheses should be scientifically based. Subject matter experts should be consulted throughout the investigation, including the initial identification of hypotheses. Once a hypothesis is identified, it must be investigated, and all hypotheses should be validated or invalidated. So A lot of times you might hear what I do in drug manufacturing called regulatory science. And it truly is a science. It's a lot of math. It's a lot of... there's law involved in it as well. And of course, you know, from every part, I would say that GMP touches, you have to have a scientific approach when doing it. There's something called corrective and preventive action programs. Corrective action, once a deviation occurs or something happens, you correct that. That's a corrective action. Preventive action is when you prevent a first-time occurrence. So you identified it. It hasn't happened, but you identified it could happen. And that's the difference between a corrective action and preventive action. As part of a deviation investigations, you also have to have a root cause identification and definitive corrective actions. So generally, when you have a deviation, if it goes beyond or if it's complex, you might have a process called containment, where you basically contain the deviation, and then later you can have a corrective action that fixes it. And that's usually identified as part of a root cause identification and root cause analysis. You need a company program. Systems should audit timeliness of corrective and preventive actions. So if something happens, you can't just let it sit around. You actually have to address it and make sure that it doesn't occur on a regular basis. So just because you correct it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to happen again. It just means that you contain it. So you have to monitor that over time. You have to look at the effectiveness of actions, and of course everything has to be documented. And an example is environmental monitoring, cleaning. This is probably one of the most cited areas with GMP facilities because it is complex and you're using a lot of different standards for these. For us, we use ISO as well as USP to keep in guidance with the FDA. And continuing on, after an FDA inspection, establish scientifically sound CAPAs, realistic timeframes, and you have to ensure compliance with commitments to FDA in terms of systems, specific issues, and of course, change control and training. Anytime you want to change anything within a GMP environment, you need a specific change control process, and this is all written in an SOP, and there's multiple forms associated with it to document any change, and that you actually thought about the change that you're trying to make, and everybody's aware of it as well. So, responsibility and authority of quality control. The quality control unit shall have the responsibility and authority to approve or reject all components, drug product containers, closures, in-process materials, packaging material, labeling, and drug products, and the authority to review production records to assure that no errors have occurred, or if errors have occurred, that they have been fully investigated. The quality control unit shall be responsible for approving or rejecting drug products manufactured, processed, packed, or held under contract by another company. And in general, the quality control unit is a separate unit, and if you have a robust quality management system, this is definitely a full-time job. In smaller facilities such as ours, people that work in the lab has to wear many hats. So in our facility, everybody is part of the quality control unit. In terms of complaints, we actually have a complaint log. So if anybody is dissatisfied with our service, and so we've treated about, not treated, I guess processed for about 50 patients thus far within our lab. So these are actual drug products that are going into patients. And so with each of these patients, they're on different clinical trials. And of course, the patients are customers themselves, but in general, it's the PI of the study. If they have any issues, they can lodge a complaint with me. Review by quality control unit, possible failure to meet any specifications, determine need for deviation investigation, adverse drug experience, report assessment, and documentation of complaint and investigation or reason for not investigating. So every year we actually submit or send out hundreds just documents ensuring happiness of service, surveys. And within the surveys, we usually get less than 1% answering back, but so far we've received 100% approval rating. Records and reports, contemporaneous documentation, critical. Laboratory and production records, trending analysis, as I mentioned earlier. Data integrity, internal review, OOS is out of specification results. So with the QC testing, if it's out of the specifications that you developed, you actually have to document that and review it. Complaints, and of course, research and development. In terms of external review, we have FDA inspections, business deals, due diligence, and product liability cases. And when you look at the reports, you have field alert reports where they look at labeling, failure to meet specs, and these have to be answered within 3 working days of receipt. And there was a case, and I believe they ended up settling for a little over $400 million, Warner Lambert. This was a labeling issue. They had a drug that basically they purported was great for everything, ADD, ALS, migraines. And in fact, they had no evidence of any of this, but yet they put it on their label that it was good for all of this, and they ended up settling for, I think, $420 million or something like that. Adverse drug experience reports, they need to be returned ASAP, but no later than 15 calendar days of initial receipt, foreign and domestic, and recall procedures and preparation. In terms of auditing, you need to have an independent audit group, which we do. We actually hire an external auditor, and we have voluntary auditing agencies coming to our facility to ensure that we're compliant with all relevant regulations. Global approach, harmonization of quality standards. So we look at not only the U.S. FDA standards, but we also look at the ICH standards as well, and we also look at EMA standards as well. Audit priority systems. So, of course, not all systems are equal, so we actually do prioritize which systems we feel could be the most harmful or dangerous or at the highest risk. And, of course, follow-up audits. And when you look at the operations of a GMP facility, and again, you don't have to remember this. I just wanted to show you that these are all of the processes that occur within a GMP facility. And, you know, at some point, we actually did calculate how many documents it would require to maintain the system. And, in fact, if you were to weigh the documents, it'd be equivalent to the weight of the moon. Just kidding. Seeing if you're still awake. But it is quite a bit. So, the phases of a clinical trial, you've all gone through this in terms of discovery, preclinical, phase one. For safety information, development activities, and GMP, it's color-coded. But I did want to point out, again, it makes sense that the requirements differ as you go up the phases. And this is called the stepladder approach. Phase one does not require compliance with GMPs, but you should have some standard controls in terms of personnel, quality control, facilities and equipment, laboratory control, component control, production control, distribution and records, as well as labeling. By phase two, you need to be compliant with GMPs. And in terms of development activities as well as safety. So that's all the regulatory portion of the talk. I did want to, before my time runs out, I wanted to show you a little bit about our facility. So I was recruited here back in 2010-2011, and I was given this space that you're looking at right now. And this is actually different than the first laboratory that we made. The first laboratory, we met with the FDA. They helped with the design, and my budget was $50,000. And we were able to build a GMP-compliant one-room facility, which we did end up treating 10 patients within the facility. Quickly, after 2 years, the board of directors at Roswell Park did approve building a larger facility. So we met with the FDA again. These were the attendants from the FDA, DCTG, and DMPQ. And so this is the new facility. It's 2,500 square feet, heck of a lot more than the 50,000 that I was originally given. And so some of the things that we have to comply with the regulations that I just discussed earlier, we have grid ceiling with clean room tiles. So these are special GMP grade tiles, water and scrub resistant epoxy paint. Of course, with any type of manufacturing facility, you have to ensure that you can clean it. Pre and terminal HEPA filtration. So I mentioned earlier about the HVAC. So we have our own air handling units where we get 55 air changes per hour. So an area like this gets about 5 air changes per hour. Everything has to be monitored 24/7. So we have a iSensics monitoring system. So if anything goes out of control, it actually emails us and calls us. Everything is secured and restricted. We have pass-throughs. These are little entries for products. And really, because the rooms are pressurized, and they're monitored, and these rooms are class 10,000, meaning that they have less than 10,000 particles of dust per cubic foot. We really don't want to disturb the pressure or the air, so anytime we have to pass anything through, we use these pass-throughs. The air is single path, positive and negative pressure. Again, we don't want air recirculating. They are filtered because we want the environment in there very, very clean. And again, I mentioned that it's class 10,000, but the reality is that the clean rooms that we have here actually operate at probably less than 1,000 particles of dust per cubic foot. And inside the biological safety cabinets, we normally have less than 10 particles of dust. In fact, most of the time we operate at almost 0 particles of dust per cubic foot, every time we monitor at least. We have coved epoxy, poured epoxy floors, and again, this is all for cleaning. Temperature and humidity controlled with any type of drug product. Even though cellular therapies are in liquid, the facility still has to be humidity controlled and temperature controlled, just because the equipment that's in there could be affected by both the temperature and humidity. And of course, everything is under full emergency power. And in terms of the design and the layout, this is the layout. We have 4 production rooms. If you look at capacity, theoretical capacity is over 1,000 patients a year can be manufactured. Drug products can be manufactured within this facility. Theoretical, of course, you never reach theoretical. If you can reach 50%, that's considered good, but we operate at much lower than that right now. We have office space. Everything is unidirectional flow. The green means class 10,000, less than 10,000 particles dust per cubic foot. And the last thing, another difference between California and New York. And one of the first issues that I had when I came here, and I didn't know about this, is New York State has specific regulations for blood products. And because we're doing cellular therapy, we were actually held to New York State regulations. So a lot of our processes, we actually had to end up being compliant with New York State regulations. So we actually have we're actually operating under a blood bank license in addition to an IND. In California, this wasn't an issue for cellular gene therapy. Thank you. Any questions?